Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody to Paranexus Universe. Today is Thursday, August 20th, 2009. This is Doug Kelly here with my good friend and co-host Grant Rubendunst.
Hey, everybody, welcome. We got a great show tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be a lot of stuff to kick around. So welcome.
Yes, educational. And we also have Mike Jones here with us tonight. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. I think it's going to be a great show myself.
Absolutely.
We are going to talk about how to review evidence, and we're going to talk kind of bring some things together, talk about some conceptual stuff, and we have a page of mostly pictures, but a couple of videos that we're going to review just to kind of take everybody through the stuff. Now, we're having storms, thunderstorms here in Florida, and if by some chance the power happens to go out briefly and we go off the air, just hang tough and we will be back on shortly. It hasn't been staying off, and it looks like it's simmering down, so hopefully it won't be an issue. But if it is, just hang with us. If you would like to call in and talk with us about a picture or offer your thoughts on evidence review, we'd love to hear from you. The numbers are on your screen, 347-945-7799. I'll put it in the chat room. You also have the click-to-talk button if you have a headset on your computer. And, of course, those calls are free because they're on the Internet. You can also ask questions in chat, the chat room, or comment on things in the chat room. And let's see, what else do I need to state? If you have a picture that you would like us to consider on the air tonight, you can do that. If you put the link to it in the chat room, then we can go and take a gander at it. Time permitting, which we should have. So, to follow tonight's show, I've set up a page with some pictures on it, and the easiest way, I'll put the link in the chat room as well, but if you go to the main show page and you look in the description there, it should give you in the description it'll say click here for the evidence supplemental page. So just look for that, and you can click there. I'll put the link in the chat room here just in a second, and we will be referring to that page as we get into specifics on the evidence. So let's talk about, conceptually, evidence review. Now, I just want to bring up three essential rules, at least, with evidence review. Now, we've talked about these on previous shows at different points, but I want to bring them all together. And here's the first rule. If it's a picture or a video, it is almost worthless as evidence. Almost worthless. A lot of people may not agree, but it is. You cannot prove much with pictures or video. And in this day and age, I think a lot of people are coming to that conclusion because photos and video can be hoaxed, and they often are. So rule number one, honestly, photos and video are almost worthless as evidence. Some cases they can be compelling, but those are really few and far between. Second rule, this is something that we've really talked about on reinventing the anomalous research field, and that is when we look at evidence, we need to look for what does it tell us that we don't already know. And so if you're looking at a picture or a video, the big question is there any meaning in it? Does it tell us something? If it's genuine, paranormal in nature, does it tell us anything? And then kind of a follow-up to this rule is, if you look at a photo or a video, the first question you ask is, assuming it's genuine paranormal activity, will it tell us anything we don't know? If the answer is yes, then go ahead and pursue it and try to analyze it, see what you can come up with. If the answer is no, don't waste your time. There's plenty of weird pictures out there, but what do they really tell us? And like I've said so many times before, you know, you get a picture of an apparition. Let's say it's a genuine apparition. What are you left with? You're left with a really cool picture. But what does it really tell us as researchers about what's going on? It might say something. Who knows? But if not, don't even waste your time. Third rule, something to keep in mind throughout any kind of evidence review, is Occam's razor. And Occam's razor simply states that the simplest explanation is likely the correct one. I'll repeat that. The simplest explanation is likely the correct one. Now, that doesn't mean it's always the correct one. It just means that it's likely the correct one. You guys want to join in on any of that stuff?
Well, I'm absolutely in line with you on this, Doug. I think that when you're starting to do evidence review, you really have to put your scientific cap on, and you have to use all of that background or whatever you've learned of that process and apply it to evidence review. If you don't do that, whatever results you think you might get, they're going to be skewed, and they won't be accurate at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you also, as you allude to, you've got to throw any preconceived notions out the door long before you start looking at any kind of evidence.
That's absolutely true. And the other thing that we want to keep in mind, too, is when we look at evidence of any kind, whether it's photo, video, audio, we need to remain grounded, keep a level head, a rational head, no preconceived notions, look at it and see what you got. Mike, did you want to tell me?
Yeah, I will. And this is very, very true when you start reviewing UFO video footage. That's, you know, one of the main things I've talked to you about. You know, you may get some interesting answers as far as the physics, you know, of movement and velocities. But when it's just an orb or it's just a speck that somebody's observing, really all you have is just that information-wise. You've got to point out it in space that's moving. You know, it really doesn't offer any real information outside of the physics or the dynamics of its movement. So, you know, you really have to, it really doesn't have any good information that you can actually use for research outside of you've got something odd on video, you know, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's about all I can, you know, say about the video end of it.
And, you know, the real danger, guys, and I know that we've kind of talked about, all three of us have talked about this before, is the fact that nowadays, whether it is a UFO or some sort of cryptozoological sort of critter, you really have to be careful. But I think even more so with UFOs, and ghosts too, I suppose, that they aren't computer-generated imaging.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of the classic examples of that, and our audience is probably familiar with it, is the UFOs over, what was it, Jamaica or Turkey.
Yep.
And those, to me, I mean, it was just too good to be true. So I guess that's kind of like Occam's razor. If it's too good to be true, it probably is.
I'll tell you the scary thing here is there have been really, really good photographs of up and close personal sightings of UFOs. Now, at the time, they were valid, but then people started making CGI images of these very same UFOs and including them in videos. Then we got into the situation of, okay, which came first? We don't have an available date that any of this stuff's occurred or when these photos, you know, no way to actually verify when the photos were taken. So now we get into a situation is who's hoaxing who here, and all of it has to be thrown away. And
absolutely, Mike. When it gets murky, When it gets really murky, then you know what? You're better off, as painful as it might be, to throw it out.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me interject something here, too, which is of paramount importance, something I've been preaching for years. The validity of any piece of evidence stands squarely on the shoulders and on the credibility of the person who gathered it. So as researchers, never forget that when you call something, and I'm talking about a piece of evidence, when you call it and you say, yep, it's genuine, you're putting your reputation on the line. And if it later comes out that it's a fake or something like that, you've now just lost a lot of credibility. So be very leery about what you call genuine. And the best thing to do, unless you can prove it, is to use some other expressions. For example, some of the ones that we use is, you know, paranormally compelling or paranormally significant, or it's compelling, or we can't explain it as of yet with natural explanation, something like that. Never go out there, and we see this all over the internet, especially with those damn orb photos. You know, orbs are everywhere, spirits are everywhere, and it's rather controversial among the ghost hunting segment of the paranormal research field. And honestly, you know, as we've said a zillion times, orbs are not in any way proof of paranormal activity. They're dust, they're pollen, they're rain, their moisture, their anything other than spirits. Now, I want to believe too, and I've said this before, you know, and if somebody can show me why an orb should be associated with paranormal activity, I'd love to hear it. If they can give me a compelling reason. Now, can I prove that orbs are not 100%, but the weight of evidence, the preponderance of evidence suggests that orbs are nothing but dust and airborne contaminants and have nothing to do with paranormal. They really are a product of digital photography. That's when it became so apparent. So just bear in mind that when you're reviewing evidence, be very leery about what you call paranormal, because you're putting your reputation on the line, and that's the most precious thing you have, is your reputation.
Well, you know, Doug, I also think, you know, one of the examples I like to give for orbs is, and some of our folks in the audience who may be scuba divers will remember many years ago, and if you've done any diving in like the Caribbean or any place else and you want to take photographs, you've got to be very careful that you don't stir up the bottom. And sometimes you can get ready to take a photograph and everything looks crystal clear, and when you get your photograph back, you'll find that you've got all kinds of these little orbs mm-hmm. in your picture. Mm-hmm. And I think that what people lose sight of sometimes when they're doing the in their excitement, they're taking pictures, is they lose sight of the fact that we swim in an ocean of air, and there's all kinds of airborne particles and bugs and water mm-hmm. droplets and who knows whatever. So they're legitimately capturing something, but it's highly doubtful that it's a spirit. And I think we just have to remember that what happens underwater is when the flash goes off, it reflects off of those little almost microscopic particles that are in the water that, reflect it back into the face of the camera. So, into the lens of the camera, I mean. So.
Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely true. I have a picture. I should have put it on that page, and I might if I get a chance here. You know, I picture of me underwater while diving, and, you know, the spirits are with me. They're all around me. There's a zillion of them, and they're just orbs.
Even underwater, well, you know. How many of them have bad faces?
And I can actually give you another example. The rod phenomena. I can't remember the gentleman right offhand, but he was taking pictures of these rods that look like they have these feathery wings on the side, and they're actually insects. Mm-hmm. And what the deal is with digital photography and digital video, you have an I frame and a P frame that are actually being shown at the same almost instantaneous moment. There's just a fraction of a second apart. So what you end up having is a double image. And what it is you have a bug that has been stretched in that frame, so you get this appearance of a rod with what looks like fins in it flying through the air. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing that, you know, how many people went crazy about the rod phenomena, mm-hmm. and everybody was capturing rods there for years and years and years until somebody finally figured out, hey, wait a second, this is digital video. this is what's causing it. Because once you take away either of those frames out of that video, all of a sudden all you have left are bugs.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and that's it. So, you know, that's what I find interesting. You know, people misconstrue things because of technology. They don't do enough research to understand how their own equipment works. And you get a lot of gadget freaks. Well, yeah, but still, you have to understand how your camera operates, or you are going to misdiagnose what you're seeing.
Speaking of bugs, one of the common things, if you're using IR cameras, infrared cameras, is you're going to capture from time to time, in addition to a zillion dust orbs, you're going to capture an insect flying around, and they're going to light up like they're a freaking bird on some. I mean, they look huge.
How true. Yeah, how true.
And so bear in mind, if you see something fluttering around, flying around, it's an insect, and that's all it is. It's just, you know, lit up with the IR.
And they look like fairies, angels, all kinds of different
mm-hmm.
shapes, depending on how the light refracts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting.
All right, so let's, having said all of this, and just to reiterate, remember, almost every photograph and video is worthless when it comes to proving the paranormal. Secondly, when you approach evidence review, whether it's photo, video, or audio, ask yourself, assuming that this picture or video is genuinely paranormal in nature, will it tell us anything we don't already know? If the answer is yes, then continue on with your analysis. If the answer is no, don't waste your time. Next rule, Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is likely the correct one. And don't forget that your credibility and your reputation is on the line. Now, in terms of proof of paranormal, Sharon asks in the chat room, has it been established as to what specifically could be provided as absolute proof since pictures don't do it? And that's a great question. If pictures and video are not proof of paranormal activity, then what is? Well, that's a great question, and I've been thinking about it ever since she first asked it over a year ago. And there's some things that come to mind. One is EVPs. EVPs, in my mind, are probably the most compelling form of evidence that we have when it comes to the haunting part of the field. EVPs are they always genuine? Of course not. But there are some that just cannot be explained, and they are very compelling. So in my mind, EVPs are one of the most compelling parts of that proof. It's anecdotal proof in a way. Another, and when we look at the UFO field, I mean, look at all the data that we've accumulated over the last few decades. Yes, 90% of all of this stuff can be explained naturally or with psychology or something, misidentification, things like that. But there are a few cases that are extremely compelling. So, you know, what does that leave us with? When you have credible witnesses, reliable witnesses, such as airline pilots and Army and Armed Forces people and radar technicians, things like that. When you have credible people, credible witnesses, who have to be credible because of their profession, when they are reporting some of these things, you know, what are we left with? You know, really, what more do we need? Yes, we'd love to have a ship. You know, we'd love to have a ship. We'd love to perhaps shake hands with them. But in the absence of that, what more do we need? I mean, the anecdotal evidence is there. They exist, in my opinion. And I am calling that one. As far as abductions, we're working on that. That's still out there, you know. How can we prove that they're actually existing? Well, we know something's going on, and we're still working on that. You guys have any comments on that? Proof of paranormal?
Well, you were discussing the EVP aspect, and as far as proof of paranormal, you know, when you get direct interaction and EVP or confrontation in some cases, I think that is just as good as being able to sit down and interview them. You know, that is just, I mean, that's just like walking up and meeting a person on the street, in essence, to me. There is no way to deny what you're hearing. You know, that is one of the most excellent pieces of evidence, in my opinion, is EVPs. Now, when you get into abductions and so forth, you, of course, have physical aspects of it. You know, this is the realm I'm researching. And, you know, depending on who I'm discussing this with, you know, and their claims, if I've got enough physical evidence and what they're discussing with me is something that people don't normally know from reading books. You know, there's a lot of literature out there on this subject, but there's a lot of stuff that nobody ever talks about. And when I have somebody approach me and start telling me their story and they start repeating things that only certain people would know that are the researchers, that all of a sudden starts ringing the bell, you know, right there. That tells me that they've really experienced something. And then when I get these other people to try to tell me stories that, you know, pretty much comes back down to either they're dreaming and they're having a hard time telling the difference between dreaming and reality, or they're schizophrenic, perhaps. You know, I've run into that before. I've run into all kinds of different situations. And the main thing here is with abductees, you have to rely more on the person experiencing it than the actual evidence at this moment. Now, you know, there has been a few breakthroughs, but it's not been proven. It's only happened in a couple of cases, so it's not like the end-all proof. So, you know, there's a lot more going on in that realm.
And Sharon asks a follow-up question. When you get proof such as that, where does it get officially published and then accepted? I guess I'm thinking in terms of how the medical profession publishes their findings and it becomes officially accepted by the medical community. Well, and therein lies part of the problem with the paranormal community, the anomalous research community. There's a lot of different factions, a lot of different people. I mean, we're all part of that. And we all need to come together as a group, which is, of course, one of the reasons why Paranexus exists. You know, willing to work with, willing to share, to network and all that. And we need to get that wrapped up. We need to pull together. And I don't have a magic answer for that one. I don't know how to do it other than what we're doing and just taking the time. But that's
well, you know, Doug, one of the things, you know, as far as I think that's absolutely critical. And I think maybe, you know, folks that may be new in investigating or maybe even involved in their first investigation is I think it's really important to move slowly. And by move slowly, I mean you don't have to come to a conclusion. I think you need to think about it. I think you need to a group that's really looking to try to find substantial evidence needs to also share whatever they have, which kind of dovetails with what you're talking about, to bounce it off somebody else. Mm-hmm. We all do that. I mean, and scientists are no different. They use it, they put it up there, and you know what? If it stands up to the critical test, they take the next step. So I think you should look at evidence review as a step series to some degree. How you or your group decide you want to approach it, that's great, but don't rush to judgment.
Well, I do want to add to this too. I think a lot of these outside research groups, the one thing they're not realizing about Paranexus that they don't see is behind the scenes. When I review something, Doug turns around and reviews what I'm saying, and vice versa. Grant check. I mean, we all cross-check each other. And the reason we do that is because one person's perception can't always be correct. Okay? Mm-hmm. And it's very, very, very important that when you go out into the field and your reputation's at stake, you need and want this, because what it does is it further validates what you're trying to achieve. If you've really got evidence of, I mean, really good evidence that's going to, you know, just blow everybody's mind, the one thing you have to do to make sure that it lends itself credibility is let everybody else review it also. And then the moment that everybody else says, hey, man, you got the real deal, then you go public and you're good to go. You don't have to worry about getting slammed.
And you should never be, you should never ever be afraid to put in your research and your evidence under the microscope.
No, that's the whole point of it, isn't it, guys?
Absolutely, yeah, because it's you. It's all about you and the fact that you can't cut corners when you're doing this stuff.
Now, let me add to that, too, and also an announcement I should have made at the outset is we've made some changes to Paranexus website. Here, quite a few months ago, we went ahead and opened up the forum to free forum registration so people could come in and participate. And we thought that might get people more involved and sharing and so forth. Well, unfortunately, that didn't work. You know, a bunch of people have registered and joined, but very, 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 very few have actually participated and shared and posted and things like that. And so we, after discussion, we made the decision to go back to the way it was before, where Paranexus paid members have access to just virtually all of the forum and all of the site, and there are no more free forum memberships. And so we encourage anybody who has a free forum membership to convert that to a paid membership. Simply go to your profile and process your membership dues. It's as little as $4.50 a month. And we're getting a lot more interaction with Paranexus paid members, and that's where a lot of the stuff goes. And once we get findings, or we have findings on a certain thing, then I will publish it in the public part of the forum for everybody to see. So we encourage people to do that. And it gives us a kind of a private area that we can flesh out details, we can cross-check each other, we can share our thoughts, our observations, and it's proving to be a good thing. So
And brainstorm and kick things around and play devil's advocate and bounce things off of each other.
Right.
Absolutely crucial. Absolutely crucial to making the process legitimate.
Absolutely.
In a private setting, you know, at least in the beginning, and then we can share that once we finally come to something with the public. Now, let's with all this having been said and the discussion, the conceptual parts of it, let's go to some of these pictures and videos that we have prepared. And I, again, put the link in the chat room. The link is also in the description part of this show. If you look here, look on there, it'll say click here for the supplemental page. Just click that, it'll open up in a new window, and you can follow along with us. Now, these pictures and so forth on here are just random pictures. Some I found on a website here and there. Some have been submitted. They're just random pictures. And we're not here to criticize or put people down. We're just here to review evidence. All right. Let's take the one at the very top. This is apparition question mark, and it's got the primary picture. Now, if you click on those pictures, they'll open up full size in a new window. Now, this picture was stated as being an apparition where I got it. And when I looked at that and studied it a little bit, it occurred to me that it looks like somebody's outstretched arm with a fist. So if you look at Exhibit A, I took a picture of my outstretched arm and superimposed it on that. And I even recreated the entire thing in Exhibit B, which is a ghost I caught in my foyer today, even casting a shadow. That's pretty cool. So you look at something, again, is it real? You know, what does it look like? You got to ask those questions. Be grounded. Be rational. Don't be too quick to offer a paranormal explanation. Rule out everything else first. Now let's go to the next row where it says mists and look at picture one. Now this is important because I put the exposure time below it. If you're not familiar with EXIF information, EXIF, that's an important part of the review process when it comes to photographs. And if you ever get a picture submitted or somebody wants you to look at something, you need to check the EXIF info. Now, you can check that easily with a number of different programs. IRFN View, I-R, F as in Frank, A-N, View, is a free program that you can use that will show you that EXIF information. Just look up IRFN View on the net, and you'll find it. You can download it. It's also in the download section on Paranexus, if you remember. Anyway, take a look at this picture, and the biggest issue with this picture is the exposure time is 4 seconds. Think about that for a moment. That means the shutter was opened for 4 seconds. You know, a lot of stuff can happen in 4 seconds when it comes to a photograph. So, you know, is that anything paranormal? Well, when I look at a 4 second exposure time, I have to say no. How can we rely on anything that, you know, when the shutter was open for 4 seconds? The next picture, picture two, there was no EXIF info on this picture, so I can't tell you how long the exposure was. But in looking at that, what does that look like?
Well, I believe that would be cigarette smoke, right?
It does. I mean, it looks like it.
That could be my aunt. That's my aunt. No.
I think it's ectoplasm for sure.
Well, you can see the little ghosty up there with two big eyes.
Mm-hmm. I imagine if you look at it long enough, you can see anything you want.
Mm-hmm.
But
which alludes to apophenia. Also, apophenia and pareidolia are basically essentially the same things. It's seeing order in disorder. You look up at the clouds, you see shapes. You know, it's the mind's propensity to put order to disorder, and so a lot of times we do that automatically. Next picture, number three. This was put forth as a real apparition type mist. Now, when you look at that picture, and I'll just ask you guys to so you can get in on the discussion. You look at that picture, what do you notice? You just look at the entire picture. Aside from the mist, what do you notice?
It's the back of somebody's house.
Right. What else?
Let's look.
Well, there's obviously snow on the ground.
Yep, yes. And lots of it. Or not lots of it, but there seem to be particles in the air.
And
almost like if somebody was at a snowblower going.
Well, it's nighttime, so they probably don't have a snowblower, but it's snowing. That's one thing. So we know it's cold.
Can I make a logic leap here for everybody? Just being in home remodeling earlier in my livelihood, guess what's right next to a kitchen, everybody? Your washer and dryer.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
Yeah.
So it very easily could be a dryer vent doing that. This could easily be somebody breathing out.
Yes.
It could be exhalation in the cold. That's a good point, Mike. Especially since you don't know what the angle of the camera is really at, or where the person is in relationship to the camera.
Don't know how cold it was.
That's right.
But it definitely was cold. So you look at that picture, and is there anything in that picture to suggest a paranormal conclusion? The answer is no. There's not. Picture four is, quite honestly, cigarette smoke. It literally is cigarette smoke. I took that outside of a hotel once, just to see what it would look like. And you can see variations of that type of pattern, like in picture two of that same row, in a lot of pictures we get, in a lot of pictures we see. It looks like smoke, and it is. And even if it's not, what is it about that picture that would lead us to a paranormal conclusion? You know? Even if one could say that is not cigarette smoke, it still doesn't mean that there's anything paranormal there. It could be something else.
Well, let me throw this at the audience, too. If you know anything about physics, Tesla, in his day, when he was building Tesla coils, when he fired them off, he used to get this ectoplasm-looking stuff being emitted around the coil. High electrostatic discharges also cause this kind of etheric smoke, which I will find a photo eventually and post on our website to show people. So, and I do know because I've actually seen this in a lab before. And you also get orbs, little energy-looking things. And all it is just a buildup of static electricity, like ball lightning. And, you know, it's just general physics, you know.
I don't know if you guys will agree with me, but I kind of think you might. When you're outdoors, I think everything's up for grabs in terms of what those digital cameras are going to pick up.
Oh, God, yeah.
And you know, they're so sensitive. I mean, they obviously can pick up atmospheric conditions, so who knows? It gets dicey outside to me sometimes. I mean, we have our own photographs, Doug, as you're well aware of, that are fairly compelling as far as the mist is concerned.
Well, I mean, all it takes is a barometer dropping, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The barometer drops quickly, and all of a sudden you get fog out of nowhere.
Yep.
And little patches.
But what it's in this case, you know, if you're in a summer day and this person's sitting in their back porch, this person's sitting on their patio, and it's quiet, and you can see there's a fence back there, and if it's still, the air is moving, somebody blew a cigarette or smoking a cigarette, even you can see on your patio, it hangs in the air for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of hangs in there until it eventually dissipates, a lot longer than most people suspect it to.
And the camera can pick it up even better than you can see it at times.
Yeah,
that's right.
Now, if we go to the next row, the energy rods and vortexes, I've put some examples here. Energy rods are a very common, probably next to orbs, are probably the second most common thing that's seen around the web. And a lot of people think that there's something paranormal. The fact of the matter is they're absolutely nothing paranormal. They are a result of camera shake. If you're taking a picture, and especially at night, and if you're on the automatic setting, the shutter's going to stay open longer than you might think. And if you have any minute movement of your hand while you take the picture, or if you click and drop the camera like we so often do, the shutter can still be open for just a second, for just a brief moment, instant. And it will pick up and do a double image. Like if you look at picture number one on that energy rods row, this shows a distinctive pattern in energy rods. And they're always usually a light source somewhere, whether it's a reflected light source, whatever that is, it's there. And it's what it's doing is it's reflecting the camera flash. So look at the pattern on that picture number one. You see the same parallel patterns almost, like there's possibly a couple of different light sources. And if you trace that back, you can often come up with where the light source is. Now, in this particular picture, it appears that either the light source is off the side of the picture or that they're above, up there in the woods or something. Maybe there's house lights back there. Again, there was no exif info, so I can't tell you how long the shutter was open. But
I think when they took the picture, I think they lifted the camera instead of dropping it.
Yeah, could be. Look at picture two. Now, the exif info was on that one, 2 seconds. That's, again, a long time when it comes to taking a picture, and you see that camera shake, that kind of that camera streak, if you will, and it shows the same type of phenomena.
Hey, there's some of that mist at the top, too, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
And if we just skip picture three for a moment and go to picture four, you can see another example of the energy rod. Now, if you look at that one, you can see the light source to the left. It looks like the head of a snake, if you look at it that way. And again, there's no exif info, but I can almost guarantee that the shutter was open longer than an instant. It was open long enough, and the person just moved the camera ever so slightly, and it just streaks. Now, people say, well, why isn't the rest of it all blurry, too? I don't know the answer to that, but I do know in my own tests that that's exactly the way it happens. And that reminds me, if you're a researcher, check this stuff out. Go test it. You know, I did the very same thing. I have some lights in the back patio, some Christmas lights that we keep up just for decoration. And one night I set the on auto exposure, and I braced my hand against some firm spot, and I took a picture of the lights. They came out crystal clear and in focus, no camera shake. Then I held the camera, snapped the picture, and pulled the camera down right after I snapped it. And sure enough, all kinds of energy rods. And you can see them. They were all parallel because I dropped, pulled the camera down. And you can do the same thing with dust, with like baby powder or water. Take pictures of that. You know, you can see how those orbs will show up. You can test all these different things. Now, if we look at picture three, the EXIF info was there. The exposure time was 15 seconds. Not only that, the picture was taken sideways. Okay, planets, stars come into being and die in 15 seconds when it comes to a camera, if you're getting my drift here. 15 seconds is an eternity for a camera shutter. And so, honestly, I look at that, I see 15 seconds. I'm sorry, we can't even tell what that is.
I'm guessing a strap.
It could be a strap.
It sure does look like one.
It could be a curtain fluttering. It could be anything. You can't tell anything. And so 15 seconds, I'm sorry, it's automatically disqualified as anything of any consequence, of any meaning. Any other comments on those, guys?
This still goes back to the main thing I said earlier. You need to understand your equipment. What Doug said is absolutely true. Go out and test this stuff. If you get a photo and you think you had the camera perfectly still and you're still getting this stuff, go out and go back to the same location and test it again.
Yes.
You know, you always double check yourself before you sit there and publish it. Because if you're going back to your reputation here, you know, don't hang yourself.
Well, you know, Mike, very good point, because let's assume, I mean, if you're even gonna follow halfway the way a scientist would approach this, is that let's assume you go out on an investigation and you get a compelling photo. You brainstorm it, you kick it around with your own group, or you kick it around with people you trust and that are knowledgeable, and they're scratching their heads too. Well, at that point in time, you know, the one thing, excuse me, that you would want to do is go back to that house or wherever it was that you conducted your investigation and try to see if you can replicate what you caught the first time around.
Absolutely.
And I mean, it may require you going back three times if it's really compelling, or even having other investigating groups in your area that you're close to going back. And then let's assume, just for the sake of argument, you've hit the jackpot here. And it's replicated not only by you, but by somebody who's not in your group. Voila, there's your evidence.
Well,
now you're ready. Now you're ready. Now you're ready to present it and see whether it will stand the test of other people scrutinizing it.
Well, one of the other scientific thoughts I want to put out here and make sure everybody understands, I don't know how many times we get photos with no reference photos before and after.
Mm-hmm.
That is the utmost importance. And the reason I say this is because not only does it let you understand what the environment is, but what it does is it gives you reference points to make sure nothing else is going on that would mislead you. You know, that's, you need to always understand that your environment shifts, you know, from second to second. So if you've got a whole series of photographs, just because they don't have anything in them, and you've got one photo out of 20, you want to save the other photos that have the exact same area, because it will lend evidence later that you may discover caused what you were seeing. You know, you may not understand from that one photo you had a mirror across the other side of the room, and then in another photo you actually see a car light coming through the window, which actually caused the light in the room that you took a photo of, by the reflection off the mirror.
And you know what, two guys, and I think this is really important, and your point is well taken, Mike. But you know, I also think that when you're doing the investigations like that, you really have to look for those kind of situations that are causing these things to happen. And just as Mike says, it may not come out the first time around. You may have to do some digging, and you may have to really go back and look through your other photographs or whatever other data you've captured that you feel is compelling.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what Mike said, too, people submit photographs without the befores and afters. Okay. But we've also had a lot of photographs submitted where, like outdoors, like a cemetery, and even in daylight, and they'll say, well, there's something over there. You know, there's several entities in this picture, and I'm looking, I'm thinking, really, where? and how can you tell that they're entities and not foliage? And so if you're a researcher in that situation, you think you see something, you know, like in the case of a cemetery or somewhere, go back to that spot. Go take another picture. Go look at it again, because you may not have really focused on it, what was there the first time around. So, you know, you go out and make sure of what you're submitting.
Now, though, too, Doug, just in closing, as far, if we're moving on to another area, mm-hmm. You got to, you know, it's not like some on TV sometimes where everything is wrapped up, you know, in 20 minutes, little neat little segments.
Mm-hmm.
This work requires time, and it requires your patience, and it requires your diligence.
Oh, yeah. Those shows you see on TV? Yeah, those shows you see on TV are over 2 or 3 day spans, at least.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes, yeah. All right, let's go to the face in the orb video. Now, this is one that's obviously off of YouTube, and it was, you know, we saw it, and there's a lot of claims there, you know, that this orb is zipping around, and the author, the person who got the evidence, you know, zoomed in on it and shows this face. And these pictures that you see to the right are pictures that Mike did in examining this evidence, and you can see some of the different things he did, and I'll let him explain how he went about his review of this.
Okay, well, the first thing I want to say is the video in itself, if you watch the video, and you'll watch real closely, the guy is leading you through the video. I want to also make the point here, if you watch carefully, you'll see a mouse moving around on the screen, which lends me to already suggest that this guy is playing back this video for everybody to think this is a live video, all right? One of our members used his software and captured what he was calling the face. Now, when you first see in face pick one, what you're looking at, I mean, it looks pretty damn good. You know, I'm looking at it going, wow, that's kind of wild. But then I noticed something. I'm noticing these weird arcs in the photograph itself. Click on it and see it, you'll see what I'm talking about. Right above the eyebrows, there's actually contour lines. And right below the chin line, there's a contour line, almost like a perfect circle. So I went, huh, that's odd. Okay, so I went ahead, and what I use is Corel Draw Photo Paint. It has a lot of good filters on it that really helps you pull things out of the photograph if any editing's been done. One of the main tools I use is an emboss feature. And what this does, in essence, is it takes all the pixels in that picture that are light, and it actually provides shadows. So, in essence, if you get a piece of paper and put it on a surface that has any kind of texture, and you rub a pencil across it, what you do is you get an emboss, or the actual structure of the terrain. And in essence, this is digitally doing the same thing. If you enlarge face pick 2, when you click on it, you'll see what I'm talking about. I use the emboss feature. Now, you'll notice that what has happened here is this has exaggerated everything about that picture that could possibly be seen. Okay? When you emboss any photograph, if it has not been manipulated, you will not see geometric structure in the photograph. You will see a clean, what looks like everything's shaded and off to the side, more or less. What happens in this picture, since it's been edited, is you'll notice that those contour lines now are producing like a bubble. Okay? So what this is suggesting already is this guy has graphically edited this video. And there's, of course, other things having to do with the pixelation outside of the circle. I call it hard pixelating. If you look, they're just humongous blocks of digital information. And when you get to the inside of the circle, it's smaller blocks, which suggests he's using a blurring technique. In photo 3, face pick 3, when you hit that and bring it up, what I've done is I've actually added my own circle on top of that contour line to show you that it is indeed a perfect circle. The red circle below is showing that hard pixelation that I was talking about. What, in essence, when you're graphically editing something and you're using blending tools, they have a thing called a nib. What a nib is, in essence, is a cursor, and inside that cursor area, or that circle that you're seeing on the screen, is where, when you drag it across, it blends or blurs or whatever effect you're trying to achieve. Well, wherever you last leave it, wherever that last stroke is, when you let go of your mouse, it leaves this residue circle or square or whatever shape the nib. It's an artifact.
And
it'll leave it every time. And so that's how I discovered that this video has been produced. It was produced.
That's evidence of tampering, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I wouldn't have issues with it except for the fact that it's tampered with. You know, and what cued me off the first time was the fact that I'm seeing a mouse on the screen, and this is supposed to be live video. You know, well, that right there tells me it's not live video. And
he was videotaping his monitor from his video system.
But still, this still makes me believe he's playing it back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after he's done his post-production. And the thing of it is we asked the gentleman to produce the raw footage,
mm-hmm.
you know, so we could actually support what he was saying if it was true, and he couldn't do it. So
he wouldn't do it, and he contacted us about it, too. So
yes. And so you run into these situations, you know, you have to be really careful. YouTube is the worst for fake footage out there. Now, there's a couple out there.
That a cafe is not much better sometimes, though, too.
Right. Well, you have to
understand. Especially with ghosts.
That's just like going to a public channel on cable TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to see what anybody wants to post, and that's just the way it is. Now, there is other footage out there, though, and I think Doug has that. He was wanting to talk about that, maybe.
Well, there is the last video, and we're getting down to our last few minutes here, 8 minutes. There is another video I added at the bottom, which is compelling. It's a shadow walking toward the banister. It's not very long, but, you know, you look at it, and, you know, the spontaneity of the kid sounds like a young kid. You know, I haven't gone over it with a fine-tooth comb, but, you know, it's compelling. And that's about all I can say about it at this point. Now, going back to what I said at the outset, let's assume for a moment that this shadow walking toward the banister is genuine paranormal experience, an apparition, a shadow person. Let's assume for a moment that it's genuine. Does it tell us anything that we don't really already know? In my opinion, no. So I'm not going to go and waste a lot of time on it. You know, what are we left with? Assuming it's genuine, what are we left with? A pretty cool video, but that's it. As a researcher, it doesn't really tell me a whole lot. You know, it just doesn't really tell me a whole lot.
Outside of a gallery of images that say, hey, shadow people look like this. You know, that's all it does.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So there's a couple questions I want to address. In talking about cameras, question is there a big difference between a regular camera and a digital camera? And obviously the difference is that a regular, say, a film camera, say 35 millimeter, obviously uses film. Digital camera uses a digital sensor and to capture that image. And digital cameras are prone, they have different characteristics than film cameras. They are certainly prone to orbs, to picking up dust, reflecting that. Now, the small, compact digital cameras are terrible at orbs. You get orbs all the time, you know, if there's any dust. If you get a little bigger camera, a little more expensive one, doesn't have to be terribly expensive, but like an SLR or a DSLR, where the flash is away from the lens. That's the problem with the compact digitals. The flash is right next to the lens, and that's why you get so many orbs. But you get a little bigger camera, a little nicer one, and the flash is recessed. It's backwards. It's farther away from the lens, and it dramatically reduces the occurrence of orbs. Any other comments by you two on that question?
Well, depending on your situation, you might want to use a 35 millimeter camera. You know, that's the other thing. You know, that's the reason we carry different gear. There's a lot of situations where digital cameras come in handy, you know. If you know you're fixing to take a couple of hundred, pictures, you know, it may be your advantage to have a DSLR on hand, you know, mm-hmm. just because you're, you know, to carry that much film on you is almost, it'd be insane.
Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, digital is obviously a lot easier to handle. You can just upload them to your computer and deal with it. Plus, they record the EXIF, EXIF info. And just a quick note on the EXIF info, just because it's there and it states, you know, nothing out of the ordinary does not mean that it can't be edited. Now, the way that EXIF typically works, anytime you have a JPEG image, it records the EXIF information and as part of that picture. And you can view it, as I said earlier, with different photo editing programs. One is IRFanView, IRF as in Frank, AN View. Just look it up, do a Google search, or if you're a Paranexus member, you can go to the member downloads and download it. It's a free program, but it shows you the EXIF info. Now, if I was to take a picture, typically speaking, if I take a picture, take it into Photoshop, do a number on it, you know, create this cool ghost or UFO or whatever, alien, whatever, and save it, it usually deletes the EXIF info. So when you're looking at a picture and there's no EXIF info, that's a red flag. Now, EXIF info might be there, but it can be edited. They do have EXIF editors out there. So just bear that in mind. You know, I look at the EXIF info on a digital. I look at the exposure time, the ISO, different things like that, and just ponder the whole thing. And that's only if, of course, there's meaning. Now, one last question we've got to get to before we run out of time here is the question was asked in the chat, and I'm not sure if the person's still listening or not, but how do you feel about seances? And that's something we really haven't covered is the whole psychic thing, and I just want to briefly cover it in the couple of minutes or so that we have remaining.
Maybe we can do a show about it here in the future.
Well, we've got Mark Anthony coming back in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
We can address
yep.
that. But basically, psychic evidence is soft evidence. It's subjective evidence. And you have to validate it. So, you know, it's a whole different thing. You have to look at the psychic themselves. Are they grounded? Are they level-headed? Could they have even known about it? And, of course, you'd never tell psychics anything about the case before you go ever. And you have to just evaluate what they come up with in the light of what you can prove. Seances, you know, we do seances all the time because they're not only fascinating, but they potentially can give us things that we can validate later. Seances are nothing like on TV in Hollywood. They're not scary. You're not going to open up the stupid channels. You know how I feel about seances and Ouija boards. You know, they're seances are tools. Ouija boards, you know, so what? We don't really use them on investigations, but it all goes back to a person's intent, who they are, and that's a whole other realm that we have addressed on previous shows. So, you know, that's my two bits there on seances. We are running out of time. We're down to about a minute, folks. If you have pictures that you would like to submit and have us take a look at, you can send them to admin@paranexus.org. Tomorrow I'll get a little upload feature on paranexus.org where you can submit pictures and video and so forth. I know we haven't had a lot of chance to talk about EVPs, but we will address those perhaps on a future show. They're a little different, and we have addressed them on previous shows, but great evidence. Just bear in mind to look, be rational when you look at these pictures and video. Keep a level head. Remember to ask yourself, is it meaningful? If it is, go ahead and review it. If it's not meaningful, then don't even waste your time. Remember Occam's razor. The simplest explanation is likely the correct one. Likely the correct one. Not always the correct one. Likely the correct one. And don't forget that when you call a picture, a photo, or a video, when you say it's paranormal, you're putting your reputation on the line and you're risking your credibility because it could come out later that it wasn't genuine, that it was a hoax. So, at any rate, good show. It went fast. We're really running out of time. Join us next week. Mike will be hosting his abduction phenomena show next week, and we'll look forward to that. We really appreciate everybody's time and listening. Thanks, Grant.
Oh, my pleasure, Doug.
Yeah, as always. And, Mike, thanks for joining us tonight and sharing your expertise as well.
No problem, guys.
Absolutely, Mike. Great to have you here.
Everybody have a great night. See you next week. Good night.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Good night. Take care, guys.
Paramex's universe.